This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Death and taxes might be the only things in life that are absolutely certain, but a looming fight in Raleigh over how to change the state tax code is every bit as likely. Some Republicans in the state legislature want to eliminate corporate and personal income taxes and then increase and expand sales taxes. Other Republicans and Democrats have different ideas. Governor Pat McCrory says he'll consider several options, but regardless, it is likely the tax code will change. How it may change and how that will affect the two of us and the rest of us in the state are topics we're going to hash out today. Chris Fitzsimon is director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Mitch Kokai is the director of communications at the John Locke Foundation. They're both here. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So let's start with this tech. So on that, you agree.
That's right.
We're glad to be here. I think that's probably going to be the end of it. But here we go. A tax proposal. State Senate wants to eliminate corporate and personal income taxes and expand the sales tax. They say it's going to make the state more business friendly. People have more money in their pockets to spend. All that good for the economy, more competitive with other states. So let's see if it'll do that. Chris, what do you think?
Well, I think this is a stunning – it's an indicator of where we are in North Carolina that we could actually have serious political men and women stand and say that this is a good idea. This is a plan that would raise taxes on 60% of North Carolinians while giving millionaires a $41,000 tax break. It would make folks at the lower end of the economic ladder pay sales tax again, state sales tax on food to pay for some of those tax breaks. It is one of the worst ideas that I have seen come down the pike, and I've been covering politics in North Carolina for 30 years. And no less than a person than Art Pope, the state budget director, agrees that it is regressive and punishes folks at the lower end of the economic ladder and seniors. I think the fact that this is even being treated as a serious proposal is an alarming situation.
Mitch, what do you think?
Well, it's hard for me to defend this particular plan because it's actually different from the plan that we have. And Chris's group hasn't yet bashed our plan, but they will once they have a chance to look at it, I'm sure. Because ours is a little bit different, although it approaches the general concept in the same way of trying to get more toward a consumption-based tax. Yeah. Ours, which is called a USA tax plan.
Yours, the John Locke Foundation.
The John Locke Foundation, exactly. Our plan would also get rid of the corporate income tax. And it would get rid of the sales tax as well, which is different from the Senate plan. And we would transform the personal income tax into what we call an unlimited savings allowance or USA tax. You got to like the acronym. And what would happen there is before people pay their income tax, you would exempt out anything that's saved or given to charity. So it ends up being a consumed income tax, which goes about the process of moving toward a consumption-based tax system in the same concept as what's in front of the Senate right now, but in a little bit different form. But going back to whether the plan that the Senate is looking at is a good one or not, there are some things about it that are troubling. And as Chris mentioned, Art Pope, who is a funder of our group through his family foundation, also through a funder of the Civitas Institute, which is working along with Senator Rucho on that other plan. He has some concerns about it. He may have some concerns about our plan. I'm not sure. But the fundamental idea that I think everyone on the right side of the political spectrum is looking at is to get economic growth moving in North Carolina, our tax system needs to be based more on consumption and not have the penalties that are built into the system now against savings and investment. So I think at the end of the day, what you're going to end up with is some kind of plan that moves a little bit more toward a consumption-based tax, addresses some of the problems that that are legitimate problems that have been identified, including those that Chris has identified. As with our USA tax plan, you can make it more progressive if you want. The only difference is you'd have to raise the overall rate.
Well, the consumption side of that sounds, you know, if you're thinking about big ticket items, a good idea. On the other hand, exempting savings feels a little regressive to me in that people who have more money to start with get to save more, and people who are spending a great proportion of their income on basics would have less benefit. So is it in effect regressive in that way, do you think?
I'm sure when Chris has a chance to chat about it, he's going to say it is. What happens is the rate that we're talking about with our plan is 8.5%, which would replace the existing income tax, which for North Carolinians is anywhere from 6% to 7.75%. So you have a little bit higher rate, but remember, your base is much smaller because you do get to exempt out anything you save. And there's no longer any state sales tax. So people on the lower end of the income perspective, they're going to face a higher what would be sort of the income tax level, but it's from a smaller base if they could save anything, or donate to charity, put some money into sock some money away for the kids' education accounts, a 529 plan, that sort of thing. If they have a 401k and are able to make any contributions, that gets exempted out as well. Plus, the big thing that goes along with that is no more state sales tax.
Let's give Chris a turn.
Thank you. Well, I do share your concerns, Frank, about the regressivity of it. And it sounds great to say that families can use a 529 plan and can use a 401k plan. We have thousands of families, millions of people in North Carolina who can't make their bills now. So to encourage them to save and reward them through the tax system for saving when they're having to borrow money to make their daily or monthly obligations or weekly obligations, I think is very troubling. I think there's a lot of questions about how the USA tax would work. But I think it's also important to back up and say, what are we fixing? We have a tax code that is outdated. We don't have a tax code that is, in my view, hindering economic development. I think one thing Mitch and I and the folks at Policy Watch and the Justice Center would agree with the Locke Foundation is we have too many exemptions for specific industries that lobbyists have gotten through the years. But that doesn't mean we should scrap the idea of a progressive income tax to simply make things easier to understand. We need a tax system that does three things. It's stable. That means that it doesn't wildly fluctuate. It's adequate. That means it raises enough money to meet our significant needs and structural needs for investments in North Carolina. And it's fair. It asks folks who make more money to pay more money and isn't regressive at its fundamental base. So I think we need to back up a little bit and say, why are we doing this? What's the fundamental goal? Is it to redistribute wealth upwards? I hope not. Is it to make North Carolina tax system better and fairer? I don't think these proposals do that. I think what we need to do is realize our tax system is one component of what makes our state attractive or not attractive to businesses. And in fact, North Carolina's tax structure overall, state and local taxes, is roughly at the national average. We are not an overly high tax state, and I think that's been lost a lot in this debate.
Well, but the argument is to become even more competitive. And here's what both plans would do: eliminate corporate income taxes and really be attractive in these very competitive times. How about that, Chris?
Well, I think if you ask corporate leaders and economic developers, they'll tell you that businesses are not making decisions here exactly on what our corporate tax rate is. For one reason, very few large corporations in North Carolina pay anywhere near the 6.9% that we currently charge. In fact, a study done a couple of years ago showed that the Fortune 500 companies who have presence here pay 1%, 2%, and 3% tax. They know they're not going to pay 6.9% tax. I would certainly be in favor of getting rid of a lot of exemptions to the corporate tax and lowering the rate if it brought in the same amount of money. But I don't think we need to start giving corporations and wealthy individuals huge tax breaks at a time when average families in North Carolina are really having a hard time.
What about that? Well, Mitch, I'm going to ask you, I'll let you comment on that, but here's the other side of that. Become more competitive, invite more industry. But the thing that we've seen since the 1980s is a decoupling of productivity and wages, that as productivity rises and corporations make more, people haven't earned more in wages. And so the idea that attracting companies here for jobs is going to make our economy and everybody better seems to have been lost beginning with the 80s when supply-side economics became policy. So can you defend that anymore? Can you say not letting corporations pay a share of what they receive in benefits from the state is actually going to help us all?
Well, Chris pointed out one of the key problems with the corporate income tax, and its main problem is that it's sort of deceptive because corporations as such don't pay taxes. There are three groups that are going to end up paying the tax. Either the customer has to pay more through higher prices, or the workers will have to pay in that they don't get higher wages or compensation, or the shareholders pay. And a lot of people who would like to see the corporate income tax stay where it is or higher say, aha, it's the shareholders we want to tackle because those are rich people. Well, in most cases now, shareholders are 401k plans. I mean, they're the little guys who've invested their money and are hoping to get some sort of return. In your larger corporations, those are the shareholders. And the problem that Chris identified that is a key, and I think if we could find some agreement on this, that it probably wouldn't be that difficult, would be that when that you have that statutory rate for the corporate income tax, but companies pay a much lower rate, it's because they're getting these special giveaways. And that's because politicians use the corporate income tax as sort of a negative slush fund. It's like when the governor has the walking around money to just give to companies, the corporate income tax is used in the same way, in a negative way. They say, well, you know, we've got this sort of uncompetitive corporate income tax rate compared to our neighboring states. But, you know, we like your company. We're going to give you a good deal. That happens far too much. It would be much better to get rid of that deceptive tax, have the people pay through the income tax or through the USA tax, a consumed income tax, if that's the way that that North Carolina is going to end up going. But the corporate income tax has so many problems with it. Scrapping it is the best thing to do with it. Or if you can't scrap it, make the rate as low as possible and get rid of those exemptions so that government is not picking winners and losers, which I think Chris and I Right. would agree is a bad thing.
So what do you think? The budget process really starts when the governor releases his version. He says he's open to all, you know, any and all ideas. Let's speculate a little bit. Chris, what do you think is going to come out of that office?
Well, what I think and what I wish. What I think I think is going to happen is that the Governor McCrory will recommend a reduction in personal income taxes and maybe the elimination of the corporate income tax. I don't believe he will recommend, I certainly hope not, the plan that the state Senate has endorsed and proposed. And I actually don't believe he'll recommend the USA tax either. I think what his goal will be is he wants to cut taxes. And we'll see some reduction in taxes. I'm worried a little bit about where we're going to make up the difference. You know, North Carolina spending, I should point out, as a percentage of our economic activity as per capita income, is at a 30 or 40 year low. We don't have a huge spending problem in North Carolina, so I'm a little worried if we're going to take the revenue at its current level and lock it in there, that we're really going to be doing a disservice to our public schools and health and human services and other things. So, but the short answer is I believe the governor will recommend some tax cuts. The question is which ones and how he'll make up the difference.
Well, and let me give you a chance to give a little longer answer. We've heard what the John Locke Foundation idea might be, a kind of ideal tax proposal. What would you like to see in terms of tax reform? Well, we need any.
There's been a bipartisan consensus for a long time, and there's just been a hard time, it's been hard to get through because of all the special interests, that we do need to broaden the personal and sales tax base to tax more things and lower the rates, to make it fair, to don't exempt some things and tax other things. But again, it goes back to being stable, adequate, and fair. We certainly need a progressive element to our tax system. We certainly need an income tax that works, that is fair, that is progressive. I believe we need a corporate income tax that is fair and works. And I believe we need a sales tax that is lower than it is now because it would be broader and it wouldn't be disproportionately paid by folks at the lower end of the economic ladder. The most commonly used example is if I go to Sears now and buy a lawnmower, I pay sales tax. If I'm able to hire a lawn service, I don't pay any sales tax on that transaction. Obviously, wealthier people have more of an opportunity to hire a lawn service than folks who are trying to figure out how to get a secondhand lawnmower.
Mitch, what do you think is going to come out of the governor's office?
Well, Governor McCrory has signaled he's looked at about four or five different tax plans. I hope ours is in there, but I'm not sure if it is. I think Chris is right that the governor is probably not going to straight away pick one of these plans that would make the biggest change in the way North Carolina operates. He might, but I suspect that the idea that Senator Rucho has been talking about, which was the plan that relies mainly on the sales tax, will have a lot of interest in the Senate, considering that he is the chairman of the Finance Committee. We, of course, don't have a political role. We're a think tank, and so we can put out our idea and hope that someone will take hold of it. But I don't know if the USA tax is going to get a whole lot of mileage. I think if people look at the Rucho plan, kind of like the way that it's going, but don't like some of the details, maybe they'll give ours a look. But I think with McCrory, you're going to see probably some cuts of taxes and to try to make a little bit of a difference to help encourage the economic investment.
Another bill likely to come up would require voters to have photo ID, and some Republicans say they're going to pass that bill. Other Republicans have balked a little bit. They've seen a report from the State Board of Elections estimates somewhere around 600,000 voters don't have such ID. Chris, what do you think would be the impact of a voter ID law?
Well, I think it would make it more difficult for a lot of people to vote. And what we're talking about here are primarily seniors, people with disabilities, people of color. There's been a lot of criticism of the Board of Elections figures. They've acknowledged it might not be that high, but let's cut it in half. Let's say 300,000. That's more people than live in Greensboro, who would then not immediately, without taking action and figuring out how to get a photo, government-issued photo ID, be allowed to have their constitutional right to cast a ballot. This whole issue is fascinating because if you doubt that this is a partisan issue designed to drive down the votes of Democrats, consider this. Most people, from John Hood to Chris Fitzsimon and everybody in between, would say voter fraud is far more likely with absentee ballots than it is in-person voting. We don't have a lot of voter fraud. What there is more likely with absentee ballots. None of these voter ID proposals put forth by the Republican leadership address absentee voting at all. because absentee voters are more likely to vote for Republicans than Democrats. We don't have a voter fraud problem in North Carolina. We have some potential. It's mostly with absentee ballots, and yet we're not addressing that at all.
Mitch?
We don't have a voter fraud problem that is easy to detect. I mean, if we have voter fraud, we can't detect it very well now. I think if you look beyond the rhetoric on both sides, and people will consider what I say to be the rhetoric too, what will happen once this voter ID law gets passed and signed by the governor, because it will, it has broad support throughout the state, 60% is the minimum that you tend to see in polls, is that it, at the margins, might make a little bit of difference. It's not going to disenfranchise a ton of people. It's not going to find a great deal of extra voter fraud. What will happen is if there's a very, very close election in the future, there might be a better chance that voter fraud doesn't tip it one way or the other, which is a rare occasion anyway, but it's a nice safeguard to have in place.
Let me ask you about the we don't know what we don't know. I mean, it seems to me that the only way for voter fraud to work in the case of false ID is for somebody to take my identification, say they were me, show up at the polls. But when I show up and they tell me I've already voted, I'm going to make a complaint. So in that way, we would know if there was fraud and if it was on any scale that we need to address. Am I right in that?
That would be the main way. And in fact, you see anecdotally that that does happen every once in a while. People will go in to vote and they say, wait a minute, I haven't already voted. And they then can't cast their ballot and they don't know which way the person who voted for them voted. I think that the key point to this is that it's not going to make a huge difference in terms of adding to voter suppression. It's also not going to make a huge difference in uncovering thousands of people who want to try to use voter fraud. What it is going to do is if there's a really tight election and you wonder, you know, is this all on the up and up, that people will feel more confident than it is. Now, very basically on that number of the 600,000 of some people who don't have IDs, what that is a comparison of the number of people with a DMV license and the number of people on the voter rolls. It doesn't count any of the other people who don't have a DMV license but would have some other form of ID that would be counted. When this was looked at in Pennsylvania, the similar comparison was 750,000. And the judge overseeing that case, who did in fact put off Pennsylvania's voter ID law, said, now this piece of your argument is not credible. It can't be true.
Let's take that back. Let's say it's 10,000, 20,000. We're talking about a constitutional right, a franchise that people literally died to have. So I think it's a little cavalier to dismiss. It wouldn't make that big of a difference if 10,000 people with disabilities who live in long-term rest homes who haven't had a driver's license in 20 years now have a much more difficult time to vote. I want to make sure those people have the same constitutional right as everybody else. And I think this is a really bizarre way to go about this. If we're really serious about it, this should take 10 years. We should have some huge government photo ID campaign and spend a lot of money and go all out to make this happen. But that's not what this is about. This is about the fact that Republicans know this will help them in the election, just like their proposals to shorten early voting or prohibit Sunday voting. There was even a bill last year to make it a crime to take people to the polls to vote in large numbers. We should be encouraging people to vote and making it easier, not putting up barriers to address a problem that really doesn't exist. And again, if we're so worried about it, why in the world are we not doing anything about absentee ballots where it's far more likely that voter fraud can occur?
What about that, Mitch? Should we be spending more time looking at that and addressing that question?
Yeah, absentee ballot fraud ought to be addressed as well. But on the issue of the IDs, for those who would not be able to vote because they don't have an ID, get them an ID. I mean, that's something that the government ought to do so these people could do the other things in life that you have to have an ID for, like go to the bank and, you know, get your check cash,
but you don't
board
have,
a plane.
But you don't have the constitutional right to get a check cash. That's the difference. And that's what, you know, Governor McCrory says you have to have an ID to get Sudafed, which I think is one of the odder statements that he says. But you don't have there's no right in the Constitution to have Sudafed.
And you have to have an ID to go and to his office and complain to him about not having an ID. So having an ID is something we need anyway. If people don't have this ID to vote, get them a government ID to vote.
Well, we didn't check your ID on the way in, but we're happy that you are both here, and we trust that you are who you say you are. Chris Fitzsimon, Director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Mitch Kokai, Director of Communications at the John Locke Foundation. Thank you both. It was great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Coming up next, another New Orleans Gypsy Brass Circus rock band on this show. Yeah, stay tuned.